The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to cover a subject that I think you're going to find fascinating. We're going to talk about vitamin C and antioxidants. You know, there's a lot of controversy over the value of vitamins. The value of vitamins and antioxidants has been under assault. Sometimes you'll pick up a magazine or a newspaper article which carries a lurid headline that suggests that not only are antioxidants not good for you, but that antioxidants may be bad for you, that vitamin C or vitamin E may have harmful effects. Well, we're going to talk to a real expert on this, a nutritional biochemist who is quite expert in this field. He's Dr. Baltz Frey. He is a PhD researcher and professor of biochemistry and biophysics. He is director and endowed chair of the Linus Pauling Institute, which, correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Frey, is a part of Oregon State University?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
So it's an institute within OSU. And first of all, tell us a little bit about the Linus Pauling Institute. That sounds intriguing, named, of course, after the Nobel laureate who always had such a fascination with vitamin C. And apparently you're carrying on his legacy in researching the subject.
Yes. So actually, Linus Pauling was an alumnus here at Oregon State University. He was born and raised in Portland, Oregon, and then at the young age, 16, he enrolled into Oregon State University, which back then was called Oregon Agricultural College. And he got a degree here in chemical engineering, met his wife here, Eva Helen. She was a student in a class that he taught as an undergraduate student, nonetheless.
Well, you're not supposed to date the students.
Yeah, well, at that age, maybe you're still okay with doing that.
Right.
But anyway, so he then moved on and was at Caltech for about 40 years, and a brilliant career in chemistry, first and foremost. And he's, in fact, the only individual ever to win two unshared Nobel Prizes in 1954 for chemistry and 62 for peace. But what most people know him for is obviously his work in vitamin C, and that's what he kind of focused on during the last 20 years or so of his life, to figure out the role of vitamin C in human health, but also other micronutrients, vitamins and minerals. And he founded his own institute called the Linus Pauling Institute of Science and Medicine in Palo Alto near the Stanford campus, where he was an associate professor, affiliated with Stanford, and he pursued these interests in vitamin C and nutrition in general for quite some time at this institute in Palo Alto. But when he died in 1994 at the age of 93, they had to find a new home for the institute, and Oregon State was kind of a logical choice because Linus Pauling had been an alumnus here. And also, he had given all of his memorabilia, all his medals, his lab notebooks, his correspondence, everything that he collected over his lifetime, over 500,000 items, to Oregon State University. And it's in a special collection now at the library here at Oregon State. And so this made it quite logical to bring the institute here. And it was established in 1996 at Oregon State University. And they brought a small endowment with them. And I joined the institute a year later to become the director of the institute. As you mentioned, we are a part of Oregon State. So all the faculty, we have about 15 faculty now in the institute, have a home department where they have tenure. And they do some teaching there. But their research is first and foremost in the Linus Pauling Institute.
Well, I have to bring this up, though, because Linus Pauling, of course, is recognized as a brilliant scientist, having discovered many things about the structure of proteins, revolutionary findings, things that every chemistry student now has to memorize in first-year college chemistry, and we rely upon the stuff that he's come up with. But some people believe that he was good in the early days and he came up with amazing science, but then he took a sort of a wrong turn. He got interested in nutrition. He got on a vitamin C hobby horse, became kind of obsessed with vitamin C, and the quality of his research then declined. I have to say that's a narrative that's out there about Linus Pauling.
Yes, of course, and I'm of course very aware of this. and this is something that I had to carefully address when I agreed to become the director of the institute, that there was this controversy out there, and that Linus Pauling did go out on a limb and made some statements or had some ideas and hypotheses about vitamin C and its role in the common cold or cancer or even heart disease, that these ideas were quite controversial and often based more on his thoughts and his evaluation of the evidence and not so much on a whole lot of data. And he did some experiments at the Institute in Palo Alto to address some of these ideas that he had, but a lot of it was just basically hypothesis or his best guess of the role of vitamin C in health and disease. He was the first member of the National Academy of Sciences who had a paper rejected by the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, which was a paper on vitamin C, and it just didn't convince the reviewers that it was a worthwhile paper. So this is, however, only one of his contributions to the field of nutrition, this idea that vitamin C has all these roles in human health and disease. He actually conceived a larger concept about nutrition and the role of micronutrients in human health and disease that he called orthomolecular medicine. And I think that's actually a bigger contribution than his ideas about vitamin C. Orthomolecular medicine basically means the right molecule at the right concentration. So it's the idea that micronutrients such as vitamin C, but also other vitamins and minerals, play a role in the human body not only to prevent deficiency disease, but also play a role in promoting health and other biological kind of processes that are affected by these vitamins and minerals. So, for example, for vitamin C, the deficiency disease is scurvy.
Right.
And if you give someone 10 milligrams of vitamin C a day, you can cure scurvy or you can completely prevent it. But at higher doses of vitamin C, there may be additional functions of vitamin C that are important for human health, such as its antioxidant properties that are not related to the prevention of scurvy. The prevention of scurvy is related to the role of vitamin C in collagen synthesis. So there is an enzyme, a couple of enzymes that are required for the normal synthesis and assembly of collagen. That's why vitamin C deficiency causes scurvy, which is...
And your teeth fall out and you get these bruises on your skin breaks down and so on.
Exactly.
These are signs that your collagen is not being properly synthesized.
Yeah. Your vessels become very weak, wound healing is impaired. All of this is related to impaired collagen synthesis. But there clearly are more roles for vitamin C in the human body. And so this idea that micronutrients are not only useful to prevent the deficiency symptoms that are caused by not getting enough of that particular micronutrient, but that they have additional roles beyond deficiency disease, that's kind of this concept of orthomolecular medicine.
And the word itself means a straight molecule. It straightens out the molecular pathways, sort of.
Yeah, or the right molecule at the right concentration. That's kind of the idea behind it. And so you have to find the right balance of these molecules in your body to promote optimum health and potentially also prevent chronic disease. And that's, you know, the chronic disease part is really where all the controversy is about vitamins these days. When these trials are being conducted to look at the effects of vitamin C on treating or preventing cancer or heart disease or other chronic diseases. But, you know, we have to keep in mind that the biological function or the biological role of these micronutrients is not necessarily to prevent chronic disease. It is more to support normal biological function. If they also prevent disease as a consequence of that, then that's kind of a bonus on top of that. But it's the primary role of micronutrients, which are essential nutrients, which means we need them for normal functioning of the body, is to A, prevent deficiency disease, and B, to just function in, as we already mentioned, normal biological processes such as collagen synthesis, energy metabolism, you know, basically every normal biological process, every normal biological system, like immune function, cognitive function, energy metabolism, all of these require many, many vitamins and minerals in enzymes that are important in these processes.
So what actually kindled this interview was your comments, a statement that was co-authored with you in reply to the Annals of Internal Medicine series of articles and an editorial which basically said, case closed, vitamins are worthless. The debate over the value of supplements is over. We've conclusively proven that supplements have no role to play in optimizing health, except in a very few cases, you know, deficiency diseases and so on. Essentially rejecting the orthomolecular thesis. And you wrote, you together with experts from Tufts and Harvard and Children's Hospital and Oakland Research Institute, wrote a very eloquent response to that. Tell us about that.
Yeah, right. So this is exactly going back to this issue of conducting randomized controlled trials, which are clinical trials conducted by medical doctors, to see whether supplementation with vitamin C or vitamin E or other vitamins has an effect on chronic disease, such as heart disease or cancer, or age-related eye diseases, cataract, macular degeneration, things of that nature. And they cannot measure an effect, although there are some randomized controlled trials that have shown quite impressive effects, but others have not. And so based on these results, then they conclude, well, vitamins and minerals are useless. Well, that's a little bit of a big jump to a conclusion that is not quite justified based on the data. Again, let's take a step back. You can basically divide up the role of vitamins and minerals into three different areas. One is the deficiency diseases, so scurvy, beriberi, rickets, all of these deficiency diseases. To a large degree, they're not a problem in this country anymore because they are prevented by fairly small amounts of these vitamins and minerals. Iron deficiency is still quite a bit of an issue even in developed countries. There's still a big problem in developing countries where, for example, iron, vitamin A, iodine, and zinc deficiencies are causing hundreds of thousands of deaths of children in developing countries. For example, vitamin E is absolutely important for immune function, and if you don't get enough vitamin A, then these kids die of opportunistic infections, and again, about 700,000 or so die each year.
As an aside, you know, we're currently having this terrible epidemic of Ebola in parts of Africa, which are really underdeveloped and very impoverished. Is it possible that there may be a role that can be played by malnutrition in making, I mean, it's a very virulent virus, no question, but in making the virus more virulent and potentially dangerous?
No, absolutely, because it's not only vitamin A, but many other vitamins and minerals that play a critical role in normal immune function and protection against infectious diseases. Vitamin A is particularly important, though, because it is important in cell proliferation and formation of epithelial cells, which are kind of forming the barrier between your environment and the body. So in your lungs and your skin, all of these epithelial cells, they protect you, a physical barrier from these viruses and bacteria. And if that barrier breaks down because you don't have enough vitamin A, you are susceptible to all kinds of infections. Vitamin D plays a very important role in immune responses. Iron, of course, zinc. And so if you have malnutrition and a poor micronutrient status, you are certainly much more susceptible to any kind of infection. So that's certainly true. And especially, again, in developing countries, this is still a big issue, the deficiency diseases resulting from not getting enough of these vitamins and minerals.
Right. Now, but the critics in the Annals of Internal Medicine said, well, you know, we're not the third world. We all eat pretty well in this country. So let's not bother with extra vitamins and minerals. Let's just basically eat a healthy, balanced diet. You know, you heard that old saw, supplements are basically a scam and a waste of time.
Yeah, right. Well, that's not quite the case. So if you go a step higher to, you know, levels of the vitamins and minerals that the government says you should get, which are called the recommended dietary allowances or the RDA that are all on your food labels and what have you, if you reach those amounts, then you will have normal biological function of these vitamins and minerals. So these are all higher than the levels that are required to prevent deficiency. These are levels that will, again, provide normal functioning of your body, normal wound healing, normal cognitive function, normal energy metabolism, and so on. And these are the functions that are the primary functions of these vitamins and minerals in your body. So these functions, however, are not measured in these clinical trials, right? They're not looking at energy metabolism, at fatigue, at impaired wound healing. Osteoporosis sometimes is looked at. That's another problem, of course, if you don't get enough vitamin D and calcium and magnesium. So these are not so much related to prevention of chronic disease. These are related to normal functioning of the body. And that's the reason why these nutrients are essential nutrients. You know, they are required for health. They are required for normal functioning of the body. If you don't get them in the diet, you have all kinds of problems related to normal physiological function. And so you cannot say that you don't need vitamins or minerals. You do. They are essential.
Well, Yeah, you make the point that the vast majority of people in the United States do not meet all of the guidelines for dietary intake of vitamins and minerals, and that more than 93% of adults in the U.S. do not get the estimated average requirement of vitamins D and E, and 61% not enough magnesium, and 50% not enough vitamin A and calcium. So, you know, so much for the balanced diet.
Yes, and that's exactly the point. So we have these RDAs are the levels that are sufficient to provide normal physiological function of your body, but we are not getting them from the diet. And as you said, exactly, there are no over 90% don't get enough vitamin D and vitamin E, and there are many others, vitamin K, vitamin C, vitamin A. We don't eat enough carrots and fruits and vegetables. 50% of the U.S. population doesn't get the RDA of vitamin A. And then on the mineral side, calcium, magnesium, and potassium all are big problems. We don't get enough of those minerals. Over 50% of the U.S. population doesn't get enough calcium, magnesium, and potassium. We get way too much sodium, but not enough potassium. So that has severe consequences for blood pressure, for example. Again, the normal physiological function that is not being achieved because we don't get the recommended amounts. And so, you know, there is a very good reason why everybody in this country should take a multivitamin, multimineral with the RDA of all the vitamins and minerals, or almost all of the vitamins and minerals. Why? Because we don't get them from our diet. And, you know, we live in a world where the diet in developed countries is getting worse. We are eating less fruits and vegetables, and we are getting more high-fat diets that are nutrient-poor. So, yes, ideally, we would all eat the healthy diet that is recommended by the government and the dietary guidelines for Americans, but we are not getting there. And so, in the meantime, taking a multivitamin, multimineral makes perfect sense to fill these nutritional gaps. And that, to me, is the most compelling reason why I support taking multivitamins, multiminerals. It's to fill those nutritional gaps so that at least we get the RDA of almost all the vitamins and minerals that we need for normal functioning of our body.
Well, orthomolecular medicine sometimes takes it a step further and evaluates the functional effects of certain vitamins and minerals on various disease states. And even now we have a proliferation of what are called nutraceuticals, phytonutrients, essential fatty acids that are more targeted, so that it may be that the average person for mere survival could take a one-a-day vitamin. But for people with specific conditions, I think orthomolecular medicine posits that there's a therapeutic role of certain supplements.
Yeah. And also, a preventative role with respect to heart disease or cancer and other chronic diseases. And again, that's where all the controversy is.
Indeed.
There are a number of clinical trials out there that use this, a randomized, placebo-controlled, double-blind trial, which is what's really being used normally to show safety and efficacy of pharmaceutical drugs.
And is that a good model for testing vitamins and supplements?
No, that's a very poor model, because drugs are not essential nutrients, whereas vitamins and minerals are. So they are completely different in terms of their metabolism, in terms of their uptake and distribution to tissues and excretion. So it's not a good way. Also, is that in any subject who is enrolled in one of these randomized controlled trials, you already have, of course, certain background levels of these vitamins and minerals, because they're essential nutrients, and if you don't get them, you wouldn't be able to enroll into a clinical trial, because you probably would be dead of a deficiency.
Right, yeah.
So you have certain levels of all of these vitamins and minerals. You have been exposed to them over your lifetime. So you go actually from a level that is, your physiological level at that point in time, to a higher level if you take a supplement. Like, again, vitamin C, you may have 30, 40 micromolar in your blood. That's a certain concentration. That's about average. And if you take a supplement, you may go up to 60, 70 micromolar. But the difference is relatively small. And you really don't have a placebo group, because everybody in the trial has this particular nutrient already in their body.
Right.
Whereas with a pharmaceutical drug, right, you take a statin, well, you give a placebo. Those people who get the placebo, they are not exposed to the statin. So you clearly have an all or nothing situation, whereas in the case of a micronutrient or vitamin trial, you have a less or more situation. So the statistical power to see any effects is rather small, because the differences in the body levels of your vitamin are relatively small, whereas for a statin or another pharmaceutical drug, you obviously have the all-or-nothing situation, so a much bigger difference. That's one of the issues. But nevertheless, although the deck is stacked against showing an effect of essential nutrients when tested in randomized controlled trials, there are a number of trials that have shown beneficial effects, which tells you that the effect must be pretty large, because you are kind of, again, stacking the deck against showing an effect. And if you see an effect, it must be a large effect in order to be statistically significant. The prime example, of course, is the Physicians' Health Study 2, which is a very large study that has been completed just recently. It's a study that was basically done out of Harvard and some other major medical schools around the country, where they looked at the effects of a multivitamin mineral supplement on heart disease, cancer, eye diseases, and cognitive function. And they had 16,000 physicians enrolled in that study and followed them for over 11 years. The whole study cost about $35 million.
Big study.
So very, very expensive. And what they found was there was, in fact, a significant 8% reduction in total cancer incidence in those who took the multivitamin. And if they removed prostate cancer, which was the most prevalent cancer in these physicians, but did not respond to the multivitamin, so if they removed that one, in fact, they found a 12% reduction for all the remaining cancers other than prostate cancer.
So it's really comparable to a drug-like effect, because if we could come up with a pharmaceutical that reduced cancer by that percentage or heart disease by that percentage, it would be a multi-billion dollar seller.
Right, right. So 8% to 12% reduction is not small. If you sort of translate that to the number of newly diagnosed cancer cases each year, in the United States, it's somewhere around 1.7 million new cases every year. So 8%, you know, the conservative number, would translate to about 130,000 cases of newly diagnosed cancer that could be prevented each year if everybody would take a multivitamin.
Even a simple multivitamin.
Yeah, I
mean, and this is not—we're not mega dosing here. We're talking about a simple multivitamin with moderate dosing of some of these critical nutrients.
That's right. This is the standard multivitamin mineral with the RDA of most vitamins and minerals. Some of them are present at lower levels, like calcium, because it would be too
be a horse pill. It would be a horse pill.
Right. Yeah. And then the other thing is potassium, and so there are some that are actually below the RDA, but most of them are at the level of the RDA, not mega doses, just doses that the government tells us we should get to achieve normal health. And so the bonus of taking a multivitamin is not only that you fill your nutritional gaps, but that you may also get some protection against chronic disease. The Physician's Health Study 2 also showed a 9% reduction in total cataracts. And again, if you look at annual Medicare expenditure, cataract extraction is the single most expensive item on the Medicare bill. That's about $3.4 billion a year. So 9% reduction would be, you know, $300 million. Not a huge amount, but it also would obviously reduce suffering and just having these health issues of cataract and maybe even also age-related macular degeneration.
Absolutely, That's what the ARID study, which specifically looked at that, did find an advantage for taking certain nutrients.
Exactly right, yeah.
So this is this is actually a good inflection point for us to take a break because we split these podcasts into two parts. Let's stipulate this is part one of our discussion with biochemist and biophysicist Dr. Baltz Frey, who's director and endowed chair of the Linus Pauling Institute over at Oregon State University. When we return, we're going to talk and address some of the concerns and criticisms about specific vitamins, vitamin C and E and antioxidants. And we'll talk about some future research directions that the Linus Pauling Institute is going to undertake. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.